C1S. Number 20B.
It is only about 20, 25 years old that in the world of natural science and of spiritual science, the order, the evolution of an idea has become aware. Because before John Dawley, nobody was ever speaking, not even in the Christian Science field, of an ordered evolution of ideas. Up to that point, there were isolated ideas. They were talking about ideas, but they were isolated. Here an idea, and there an idea, and so on. He was the first one, which is an enormous invention, or an enormous revelation, or an enormous mutation, namely, certainly, to think in order, that ideas are ordered. And actually, the moment that they are ordered, there is evolution, there is unfoldment, and the moment there is that unfoldment, according to the law of life, which shows that everything springs up at various points at the same time in different fields when an idea is ready, that at that moment really the naturalists took up that thread. And so we have in the field of pantheology and in the field of biology, as Dinuy was a biologist, we have suddenly a new theory of evolution. Yes. Now, we go on to the next subject. So, I've epitomized soul as the same Christ spirit. See that the tone of soul, the same Christ spirit heals sin as well as sickness, and makes Christianity identical with science. Perhaps I could put it simpler and say the Christ spirit is undivided. You can't divide the Christ spirit and say he works in the realm of sin to save from sin, but he doesn't work in the realm of sickness, as theology says, because theology says we are here for the sinners, and the sick we send to the medical people. So they divide up the Christ spirit into a Christ spirit that is only interested in sinners and not in sick people. It is, the Christ spirit is undivided. It doesn't say just, I'm interested in Christianity and in religion, but I'm not interested in science. The Christ spirit is undivided. He works everywhere, without limits. If the Christ spirit heals sin, it heals sickness, and if it heals sickness, it heals the sick. That's her reasoning. Says you can't just heal sin and not healing sickness by it, and if you heal sickness, you cannot separate it from healing the sick. Because medicine heals sickness, but it doesn't heal the sick. That's what we will see perhaps next time when we take the part of medicine, that the crisis through which medicine is going today is that they can heal sickness, but not the sick. That they find out that they heal more and more sickness, and that there are more and more sick people. That people just get more often. That they get more often sick. And so they feel, what's the use of healing them all over and over and over and over again if after a few months they come back? And the statistics show that the morbidity has grown, that the healing has grown. They can heal better and quicker than they could 20, 30, 50 years ago, but the morbidity has increased. Those who are chronically sick have increased quite a bit. So, you see, that medicine too has divided garment, a divided Christ, and therefore no Christ. They can save from sickness, but they cannot save the sick. Theology wants to save the sinner, but they cannot and don't want and don't wouldn't know how to save the sick. So there is the Christ garment is split up and divided all over the place. Theology says we are interested only in the spiritual side of man, and we leave the other side of man to medicine, to physics, to biology, to physiology, to psychology, and I don't know what. If you go to a university today, you can make the following experience that you say, I'm interested in man. And then you can go to every faculty and he says, yes, I'm interested in man, but I'm only interested in his body. I'm only interested in his soul. I'm only interested in his psychology. I'm only interested in his biology. And so you can go through all the various faculties and each one of them says, I'm interested in man in one respect, but no one of them knows man as a whole. And today they naturally feel that this is all wrong, that really we should have man as an object of research, as an integrated being, and not as a disintegrated being, as a biological being, as a physiological being, as an anatomical being, as a pathological being, as a psychological being, as a theological being, as a mathematical being, and as a physical being. That's a disintegration that takes place today, and that I think is one of the reasons why schizophrenia is increasing so much. Because in earlier times, say in the Middle Age up to 1700 and so, man was still considered as a unit. But then they began to disintegrate the research into man. And from that time on, you have more and more this disintegration, and therefore this so-called schizophrenia, whatever it's called, the nervous cases. A recent statistic said in America that every sixth in America in his lifetime will end one or the other time in a nervous hospital, nervous sanatorium, or anything like that. Every sixth. A bit too much. So here, true theology, the true theos, God's teaching, God's doctrine, says, I have a Christ, and that Christ is undivided, has an undivided garment. It's an integrated garment, and it touches every field of human living. It touches sin, sickness, the sick, it touches religion, it touches science, it's all one. And there is not one field that can be split off from the other one. So, if that is so, if science is not outside of reach of the impulse of the Christ idea, I think we have to be aware that from the fields of all the sciences, we will find indications of Christian science coming through those channels. When one gets an overall picture, say, of the philosophy of science in each of the various sciences today, if one looks what happens fundamentally in psychology, what happens fundamentally in biology? What happens fundamentally in physics? What happens fundamentally in theology and other branches? One begins to see that there is a tremendous converging towards the integrated concept of man taking place. So that the idea of wholeness, of integration into wholeness, which is the pinnacle of love, is an idea that is breaking through every branch of science. What does it matter that they don't call it Christian science? What does it matter that it is not yet pure in its manifestation. That doesn't matter to my sense very much, as long as it is in the direction towards that final goal. That we see that there is really a telefinalistic plane at work, or I would even call it a teleperfectionistic plane at work, in all the sciences converging to that sense of bringing everything together into a whole. So that from that the psychological part of man, the biological part of man, the physical part of man, the evolutionary part of man, is all coming together and together and making sense together. But I don't want to go further into that subject now. But it's quite enough. You see, what we want to do is this, really, what is in my heart. To be open, to be free enough, not to think that God and the right idea is coming through a few of us people, that we are the chosen ones. We are not. God doesn't know the chosen ones. God has an idea. He has not people who call themselves Dolly students, or people who call them Christian scientists, or people who call them Jews, or Catholics, or communists, or capitalists, or anything like that. The principle of being has an idea, and the idea works. And the idea works in spite of being a communist, in spite of being a capitalist, in spite of being a white man or a yellow man or Negro, in spite of being a Swiss or an American or an English, in spite of being young or old, in spite of being a man or a woman, in spite. That's what Christ does. He breaks every material resistance. Here in Seoul, he breaks every division, every breaking up of the one whole garment of Christ, and says, I don't let that happen. In spite of breaking up sin and disease and the sick and Christianity and science into separate departments of life, I still remain the undivided garment and work as the undivided garment. Then we come to principle. The epitome is here that the impersonal Christ, the Spirit of God, not the human personality or a spirit, is the healing power. You get the tone of principle rather easily here, namely that it is impersonal, that it has nothing to do with human personality or spiritualism, and that it is this impersonal Christ that heals. That is the living power that heals. Mrs. Eddy starts this subject with a sense of church and puts the question of church in its right sense and perspective. He says, Jesus established his church. Did he establish a church? He established his church. See, he didn't establish any hierarchy, he didn't establish any church organization, and yet Mrs. Eddy says he established his church. So apparently his church had nothing to do with a hierarchy of people, nothing to do with an organization, nothing to do with a church building, but just the same, he established a church. Church in the Greek was ecclesia, and really meant, I don't know what it is in English exactly, we call it Gemeinschaft, it is brotherhood, it is congregation or communion. Johnny, would you know what ecclesia really means, church means? No. You see, the word, the term used in the Bible when he says to Peter on this Rock, I will establish my church. The Greek is ecclesia, and doesn't mean at all a church as we call a church, but it meant a communion, a relationship of people, a congregation of equally minded people.
Called out to witness.
Yes. I don't know if you know this rather well-known, internationally well-known theologians we had in Zurich. Sorry, I have to refer back to Zurich. Emil Brunner, Professor Brunner. He was a long time at Princeton. He wrote a book, The Misunderstanding of Church. And he's very outspoken that what Jesus established and what he meant with his church or ecclesia has nothing to do whatever with our concept of church. That he established a new sense, a new principle, a new foundation which would hold people together. Well, that's what I think Mrs. Eddy wants to point out here, that he established his church and maintained his mission on a spiritual foundation of Christ healing. He taught his followers that his religion had a divine principle, which cast out error and so on. He claimed no intelligence, actions, nor life separate from God. So his church, his brotherhood, which he established, was a brotherhood where in which he showed that each one has the common divine principle, and that the unity which each one had with principle would unite all mankind in one church, in a universal church, and that this new consciousness is the church. That whenever we can teach and understand that each one is one with the divine principle, that he claims no intelligence, actions, nor life separate from God. You get practically in every tone of this part of theology a sense of unity. That is the basis of theology. That if we claim no other action, no other intelligence, no other power separate from God, that then each one is acting as the idea of principle. And acting as the idea of principle, naturally we act in union, we act in communion, we act in without friction and in perfect harmonious relationship. And that's the ecclesia, that's the church. Yes. So, having shown here in the first paragraph that principle and one's unity with principle is the foundation from which to heal and to act and to work, then over the next two pages Mrs. Eddy takes Jesus' question where he wanted to know what the world was thinking that he was. How, the question then and now was, how did Jesus heal? Who or what, on line 13, who or what is it that this is thus identified with casting out evils and healing the sick? He was asking the world, he was asking the disciples, he was asking, what do you think is that which heals? Is it the person? Is it the spirit? Or what is it? Now, he was very polite first. He didn't want to perhaps put the disciples into a queer position. He said to them, what does the world think that I am? Before he asked them, what do you think I am? He gave them a very good chance to get out of it. Though they say, well, the world said either you are John the Baptist or you are Elias or you are Jeremiah or one of the prophets, but all these were dead, so more or less the world said he is a spirit. the spirit of those prophets and patriarchs has come back as Jesus. Then he said to the disciples, what do you think who I am? And apparently up to that point they didn't know. We can't hardly believe that they didn't know. I think we always have difficulty in putting ourselves into the position of 2,000 years ago. Looking back over 2,000 years ago, we always think they should have acted differently, they should have known more, they should have seen further than what they were seeing. But I think it was tremendous for them to come out of the old ruts, and we ask them that they were able to perceive something so completely new, so completely unheard of as that mutation which took place through the coming of Jesus. So let's be a bit tolerant, yes, and so on. Well, you know what I mean. That's nice. Because do we today know what is going on today? Do we today see the signs of the time? Can we today interpret rightly what's going on? What the Christ idea is really working today? To where the Christ idea is leading us? We are, I think, as much in the mist as they were at that time. Though we may think that we see clearer, and we hope we see clearer, and we hope that we are not mistaken, but perhaps when people 100, 200, 300 years hence look back on our time, they may think of us, how could these people not see what is happening? How could they not realize the main thing? What is foremost happening in the world? Why could they only think the outward manifestation and be just blind at what's going on with computers and with rockets and going on the moon and I don't know what, when the main thing, hidden in secret secrecy, was something very different? At that time of Jesus, many things went on in the Roman world and in that Mediterranean world. Wonderful things, wonderful building, road building, armies and so on, building up an empire and so on. It was tremendous worldly things happening, and then in secrecy there was just a simple man being born, going around, having nothing, possessing no house, no car, no horse, no donkey, nothing at all, and just preaching a little bit and going to the next place, not knowing where to lie, he said. And this was the thing that happened. It wasn't the Roman Empire that happened. It was this little idea that happened. And how can we expect that many people would be able to have spiritual sense enough to perceive what happened? And today, we are in the same position. It will take all our spiritual sense, it will take all our receptivity, all our meekness, all our purity of heart, and blessed are the poor in spirit, and all that it will need to touch and to find out what is the Christ idea wanting us to do today. What is the change that is going on? What is the mutation that is going on? So at that time, apparently, the disciples and the world were in doubt of what Jesus was. Until then, as you know, Peter said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. It was no more the Son of David. It was now the Son of the living God. He could see now the mutation, the new thing that has happened. I'm not so good as other people on the Bible and so on, but as far as I remember, everything of great import in Jesus' life was always from above, was always coming from above. There was always that influx of light from above. A voice from above said to him, thou art the beloved Son, and so on. Just as in the day of Pentecost was from above, the influx, the suddenness, that changed the whole history of the world, that changed the whole history of the spiritual idea. So he could see that it was the Son of the living God, life, that life has brought forth a new form, a new man. Yes. Then all the rest, I think it's all about the thing, it's easy for you to understand. The main thing is that we see, then Jesus' answer was so pertinent that he said that, where is this? That he said, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed it unto thee." The flesh and blood could not reveal it, but my Father, which is in heaven. See, again, the revelation came from God, from the Father. It wasn't that they could trace and see the idea steadily growing and growing and growing up to the form of man as Christ Jesus. The revelation for them came also right from the Father. It broke in upon them and broke down every traditional belief that they could have. And it was the Son of the Father. Yes. And then afterwards it just showed that that is able really to break hell, to break the gates of hell. That the new sense of life is doing that.